This is Tamiko Faison, your host for Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color, a podcast featuring therapists of color who are entrepreneurs and leaders in their space across the world. The purpose of this podcast is to inspire therapists of color by sharing the accomplishments of therapy entrepreneurs and leaders of color and to support them in their roles. Today we have Dr. Frederick Covington as our guest. And if you don't know the name, I don't know, maybe you've been under a rock or something like that, because he is everywhere. I mean, literally everywhere. I'm going to read his bio and then we'll start with the interview. Dr. Frederick Covington is an entrepreneur, occupational therapist, award-winning inventor, university professor, clinic owner, and published author. Following his graduation from Howard University, he began his career as an occupational therapist. His areas of expertise include pediatrics, school-based intervention, autism, developmental disabilities, physical disability and dysfunction, technology, as well as geriatrics. Holistic patient care is at the center of his mantra, being treat the patient, not the diagnosis. Dr. Covington has honed his skills in the Washington, D.C., Virginia, and Maryland regions by providing residential, clinical, and school-based occupational therapy evaluations, adaptive equipment assessments, and safety ergonomic modifications. In addition, Dr. Covington has been recognized for his pediatric treatment methods for individuals presenting with intellectual impairments, behavioral problems, ADHD, OCD, sensory integration deficits, learning disabilities, and executive functional disorders. Welcome, Dr. Covington.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
You're very welcome. And, you know, just reading that bio, what came to mind, the word that came to my mind was committed. I mean, you seem very committed to the profession. If you could just tell us in your own words about yourself and how you became interested in occupational therapy and how you became an occupational therapist and so committed.
Okay. Well, I'll tell it in two parts. When I first went to college, actually, I was a music major. So I went to Howard University and I auditioned my instruments, saxophone, drums, piano, and guitar. And I thought I was in the right place. So I played my instruments, and then the professor that was there at the time handed me a piece of sheet music. And they said, Mr. Covington, we want you to play this music here. And I quickly told him, well, sir, I can't read music. And so thus the change in my career happened. Unfortunately, at the time, I thought I was just a very good musician. And so I did not want to start from the beginning, because that's what they asked me to do. They said, well, you have to start from the beginning. And at the time, I just simply refused. So I kind of wandered around trying to find what I wanted. And I took some brief time off from college because I got offered a job with a record label under Sony in New York. And so I did that for a while. And you know how your parents are. They're like, well, you can't do music forever. Well, what if this happens in music? What if this happens in music? What if you break your hands? And so my mother and father always pushed me to go back to school. So I was in search of something that I could use my creative nature in. And so I looked at physical therapy, you know, other things in the healthcare industry, and I came across occupational therapy. And it was something that at the time I had heard bits and pieces about it, but I really didn't know too much about it. So did some more research and I enrolled in the program at Howard. Moving along, let's jump from there to graduation. I just learned to love the profession and just how much creativity you can have with your clients. And seeing that every client is different. So you get I had the opportunity to bring so much creativity to the table, and that's what I loved about the profession. Now, upon graduation, I started a geriatric practice, or it was more so based with group homes in D.C. So with the group homes, there were anywhere from 3 to 7 people in a group home. And so in these group homes, they had varying diagnoses from mental disabilities to physical disabilities, and it was just a plethora of different things. And I was quite successful in the field, pushing forward a little bit more. I had my firstborn child, my son. And so he had a speech delay, and that's what I saw it as. But, you know, me being in healthcare, of course, I go and say, well, let's see if we can get some early intervention. And so brought in some early interventionists, and they came, did the evals, and they wrote down a diagnosis of autism. And I was like, well, I'm not a pediatric specialist, but I don't think my son is autistic. I know there's that speech delay, but some of the other characteristics of autism he wasn't displaying. And so I pushed against him. And in my limited knowledge, because like I said, I was all physical disabilities and geriatrics, I became what I felt was an expert in autism and pediatrics. And so that really turned my whole career, where I eventually left the geriatric field, and I almost now I solely do pediatrics.
Okay.
And that is where I am now. I know that was a bit much, but where I am now.
Well, what a journey. You know, I want to go back to, you said that upon graduation, you started this business working with group homes, which I did not know that about you. And actually, that's how I started my business. I started out 2 years after I graduated, contracting with group homes and focusing on seniors with developmental disabilities. So I'm going to ask you a question that a lot of people ask me. What made you think you could start a business after you graduated? Because it sounds like, did you start immediately after you graduated? And what made you feel like you could do that?
Well, I started shortly thereafter. I initially got a job at a geriatric facility where I was doing, you know, the everyday typical rehab, and it became a little bit boring to me. And another associate of mine in healthcare, they had actually opened their own group home. And they were telling me about, well, these people need such and such services. They need, you know, to kind of redesign portions of the house. They need various adaptive equipment. And I said, oh, well, that's right up my alley. And so I went back to my university just to, I always stay in contact with my professors. So I went back to them and I said, well, I know I've only been a graduate for 3-4 months, so I want to start my own business. And they said, well, Covington, we don't think you're ready. And oh, so, wow. But they said, well, you need more experience. And I decided to push forward.
Okay.
And it was a good decision for me because it was a very successful venture.
Mm.
But I think the most important thing that I had to do is have a little bit more confidence in myself, because, you know, when you do a business like that, I don't have anybody that I can turn to and ask a question. It's all me. So I really have to be, you know, on my game. And so I think that was the most important thing for me, having that confidence and knowing that I am the professional in the building, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that so many times that, you know, you need X amount of experience before you can actually start your business. So people were telling me the same thing, even 2 years out, like you need at least 5 years.
Right.
Who made that up? Like where does
that come from? Yeah.
And so, but I think you make a good point that if you go and you venture into entrepreneurship and you don't have, you know, that experience, that you find your support and that helps you with your confidence in that particular area. So it sounds like that's exactly what you did, that you were able to find supports and able to be confident and look at you now, you know, starting.
Yes, ma'am.
So what about your other leadership and entrepreneurial roles? Can you expand on some of those roles that I mentioned in your bio and how you came into those and what you're doing?
Well, I'm a professor at Howard where I do occupational science, which is, you know, just introducing, you know, I call them kids, but they're not kids because it's graduate school. When I introduce them, you know, to what occupational therapy really is. And so I really enjoy teaching that class. I also lecture in a business course and I speak about entrepreneurship and I enjoy that as well. I currently have a clinic in Washington, D.C., and we are expanding into Maryland,
which is
really good. And I have a couple of other ventures. I have the Occupational Therapy Insights app, which I kind of share OT information with those in OT and those that interact with occupational therapists. And that's going well. I get a lot of joy out of that and just sharing information and kind of just putting out OT just on Front Street, so to speak. I also developed something called virtual reality occupational therapy. And what that is I create a virtual reality environment where a client, let's say a pediatric client or even a geriatric client that can't get from place to place or can't access certain areas, I will virtually make that particular area. What I've done as of late with that, I have agreements with Target as well as Shoppers, where I can go into their stores, use a particular formatted camera where I can catch 360 degrees of their environment. And so I'll make sessions from those. Say from Giant, I do the grocery store aisles and I can work with older adults as far as grocery shopping. And they can get used to that environment virtually. And even if they're working on like visual perceptual skills or a child working on visual perceptual skills, I can place an item or I can ask them for an item in that virtual reality environment and they can look around that environment with the 360 goggles on or the virtual reality goggles on and they can find that object. And so that's something really interesting I like to do. There's also, I do what's called brain entrainment. And actually in 2016, I was considered for a Grammy for it, which was very interesting. I didn't win, but it was.
Hey, considered for a Grammy? That is something to be praised.
Yeah, it was interesting. But what brain entrainment is, I learned it from one of the psychiatrists that I was working with. Brain entrainment, let's say, how can I give an example? Your brain goes at a certain beat or a certain frequency. And so, for instance, those with, let's say, for instance, ADHD, it's hard for them to concentrate because you have to be in a beta mode, whereas your brain rhythm is faster. Let's say this is a crude way to do it, but let's say your brain rhythm is this in beta. And they can't get into that beta. They're always in alpha, where it's more so like this. With brain entrainment, if you introduce an outside auditory source that actually has the beta rhythm in it, your brain entrains to that frequency or to that rhythm. And so I've used it to bring in a lot of clients with ADHD or even autism into that beta range where they can increase their concentration, increase their focus, attention span, and attention to task. So that, I think that works very well. And also using it with pediatric clients with sensory integration deficits as well.
Very interesting.
Yes, ma'am.
Very interesting. So just a couple of things I want to go back to. You said that you teach a business course. Is that in the occupational therapy department or is that in another department?
Actually, it's within the occupational therapy department. Actually, I teach it in tandem with other professors. And what's so cool about this course, they have, you know, their base professors. However, they bring in different OT professionals, say like every other week. And we have maybe like a week of lectures to talk to the students about how we became entrepreneurs, what steps we took. Did we write a business plan? Did we not write a business plan? How do we market ourselves? And so I think it's something that was really needed. And I think it would be very valuable in any occupational therapy program.
I agree. I think it's entrepreneurship, I think, is becoming a buzzword in our profession. And yes. I would love to see more programs include entrepreneurship curricula. And it sounds like Howard University is doing that. So that's great to hear. Now, the other thing you said, the app, I want to make sure I get the name of that app. And afterwards, I'll have you send that to me so I can make sure I can include it in the podcast.
Description.
Okay. What is the name of that app?
Occupational Therapy Insights.
Occupational Therapy Insights. Okay, so I'm going to make sure I download that, and listeners, make sure you download it as well. And the last thing I wanted to ask you about what you were just talking about is that, you know, you seem so innovative. Where do you think you get this entrepreneurial spirit and innovative spirit from?
Well, I think it's twofold. When I was initially working in the geriatric facility, I came from working in a store called, I was working in two stores in school, one called Baba, well, I won't mention the name, but two stores I was working in to make ends meet. Okay. And so I was making, you know, $12-$13 an hour. And to come out in occupational therapy, and I'm making, say when I started, maybe I was making, you know, $52 an hour. I think I'm doing exceptionally well. However, on my desk one day, what I was being billed for was made aware to me. And I said, well, I'm getting this, and you're getting this. I said, okay, it is time to be an entrepreneur. So, yes, my eyes were open. I saw the light. The light shined on me. And so I said, wow, are my services this valuable? Mm-hmm. And that's something else that, you know, kind of gave me my worth. I was like, wow, this can be charged for what I'm doing. And so I think that pushed me into entrepreneurship. And as far as creativity, I think that comes from me being a musician and just being a problem solver. Sometimes I'll personally look for a problem to see what ways I can attack it or how can I make something better. I feel like I like solving problems.
Okay.
Excellent. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's definitely one of the key characteristics of a successful entrepreneur, that they're solution focused.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about diversity in our profession. The OT profession is 4-6% African-American.
Yeah.
I don't know specifically what percentage is African-American males, but I know it's low. Do you happen to know?
Last I checked, it was 0.824 or 0.827. It was less than 1%.
Okay, 0.082. Okay, wow. Like so that. How has that impacted you as an entrepreneur, if it has at all? If it has, how so?
I think it has affected me greatly. and this is another personal story, which I have a lot of those. So I would initially go to the AOTA conferences, and I would be there, and not that this is any fault of anyone, or I'm not trying to call out anyone in particular, but I would be asked, well, where's the bathroom? Could you tell me where lunch is? And so that just gave me an impression that I'm not noticed in this profession. I'm not the valet. I'm not the concierge. I'm here just like everyone else. And that sparked my, I guess, online persona. Because if, okay, you don't see me, you will see me. You will notice that I am here. I exist, and there's others that are like me. And so that kind of drove that being, you know, kind of not seen and not acknowledged. And also, I think working in Washington, D.C., to be in the working with the kids in D.C., where it's, you know, a majority African-American or minority, I felt that some of the OTs that was working in OT, some weren't culturally aware or culturally sensitive to some of the students. And I think that's an area that, as a Black male, I think I shine in that area. I can really relate to some of these kids, some of their, you know, situations. Yes, ma'am.
So you have used that to really motivate you to be present more on social media, which, like I said in the beginning of the interview, that you are everywhere. So if you are on social media, any of the platforms, you'll see Dr. Covington, and his creativity shines through on those platforms. What advice would you give to a therapist of color who is seeking to go into entrepreneurship or leadership roles?
What I would say, if I had to give one piece of advice, is something that we said earlier. You have to be confident in what you do. You can't come into the game, how do I say, for lack of a better word, you can't come into the game half-stepping. You have to, if you're going to step in the room, you step in the room, as my mother would say, you step in the room as the big dog. Don't step in the room sheepishly, and you can be sitting at the table with PT, with speech, and you're talking like this about your OP goal. No, you speak out, you be boisterous, you stand for occupational therapy, and you be confident in your abilities. I think that is one of the most important things to me.
So if someone's listening to this and they're like, wow, you know, Dr. Covington is so confident and he's able to step in the room and, you know, own the space, and but they struggle with it. So, you know, in my work as a consultant with some of the therapists, they talk about how they really shrink when they go into some of these spaces, you know, where they're not seen or they feel like what they're saying is not valued. Do you have any advice for those folk who are trying to get their confidence up and are really struggling as a person of color in these spaces?
I think when I initially started, I would receive some pushback because some people don't believe in your expertise, or some people don't have a lot of faith, or they don't actually know too much about occupational therapy. So what I would always do before going into a meeting or a discussion with somebody, I would always do a rebuttal to what I'm going to say. If I wanted to push back against myself, what would I say? And so I would have with me, say, like the evaluation or whatever I'm going to talk about. And I would go through that evaluation and say, well, how can somebody question what I'm saying? And whatever questions I came up with, I would make sure that I had an answer for it beforehand. And I would be able to cite research or some data points outside of myself that would back up what I'm saying.
That is great, great advice, because when you're more prepared, you're more confident.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's great advice. So what's next for you? What are your professional goals, and what's the future looking like for Dr. Covington and his entrepreneurial endeavors?
All right. Well, what's next is we're doing some online classes actually for teachers. We started one particular class, and it's a certification for teachers for sensory integration classroom facilitator. And we came up with this course because in a lot of school settings where they don't actually know what occupational therapy is, or they only see us as the handwriting people. Mm-hmm. And so I push against that, and it's the certification kind of gives them an idea of what sensory integration is and how deficits in sensory integration can present in the classroom. And so after they go through the course, they receive their certificate, and the purpose of it is to better work with those particular students with sensory integration deficits and to better work with the occupational therapists on staff. Mm. Other than that, we are diving deep into product development now. We are starting what's called the Write program. And that is it's a handwriting program with particular grips that the students use in succession, depending on their actual deficit. And I'm really looking forward to developing that, because there's some handwriting programs out there for kids that are out of reach for some of these urban schools that are not as financially enabled as some mm-hmm. other schools, because some of these handwriting programs are astronomically expensive. And I want to be able to give an alternative to that. And so okay. we are working hard on that. I think that's our next really, well, I hope it to be big thing.
Okay. Excellent. So how can we support you? What can people do to support you in these endeavors?
Just people like you, just acknowledging that people like me exist. Oh. That is a great confidence boost, and I sincerely appreciate you giving me a call and allowing me this platform.
Oh, wow. You can't see me right now because I don't have my video on, but I'm smiling from ear to ear because I'm just so proud of what you're doing, and it just makes my heart happy to see what you're doing and how you're leading and just so progressive. I think I counted, I don't know, what, 10 businesses in this interview that you have, and successful. You know, many people can start things but not necessarily maintain.
Yes, ma'am.
It looks like you're starting as well as maintaining and expanding. Any last words, or pearls of wisdom, or a quote that you want to leave our listeners with?
My quote to occupational therapists in the field is to, I think you may have said it in my bio, treat the client, not the diagnosis. Because if you move forward with treating the diagnosis, you're just going to go to a standard mindset. Well, if they have a right CVA, let's do A, B, C, D, E, F, and G, rather than getting to know that particular person. And maybe they don't need A, B, C, D. Maybe they need A, C, and W. Mm-hmm. So you have to treat the client and not that diagnosis. And you have to go into the situation like that. Sometimes I like to go into a room. I don't want to see anything in that person's chart or see their history. I want to meet that person first. And I think that's something that other therapists can utilize sometimes, to put that client, that individual first. They're an individual before they're your patient.
Yeah, so your true client-centered work, even with all that you have going on. And I think a lot of times that default does take place when people have a lot going on and they're into like quantity over quality. But even with all what you're doing, you're still client-centered.
Yes, ma'am.
Probably one of the reasons, one of the many reasons that you're so successful. So that is our episode of Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color for this week. Don't forget to subscribe, and join us for the next episode. I hope you were deeply inspired as I was hearing about Grammys and your previous history with Sony and apps and virtual technology and classes. Again, I'm grinning ear to ear. But thank you all for listening. Be sure to look at the summary with all the resources that Dr. Covington and is doing in his entrepreneurial endeavors. Again, thank you for listening, and until next time.